Hello, everyone. My name is Julica Herman de la Fuente. My pronouns are she, her, ella in Spanish. And I welcome you to the UUMA podcast. For this episode, I am here with the Reverend Kevin Allen Mann, known as Rev Kev. And Kevin, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi. Yeah, thanks, Julica. Thank you so much for the invite to be on this podcast. I'm Reverend Kevin Allen Mann. I was ordained exactly about a year ago this month at the First Unitarian Church of Oakland on October 1st, first day of Filipino American History Month and LGBTQ History Month. And it's been a joy to kind of celebrate this 1 year kind of on the heels of this big international Unitarian Universalist pilgrimage. So thank you for the invite to be here today.
Yeah. So glad to have you here and to hear more about your pilgrimage and your experience. And do I remember that your ordination was all Asian American colleagues?
Yeah.
That is so cool.
From the beginning, we had an all Asian American, you know, sort of worship team. Everyone that had a role, you know, in the service was an Asian American UU leader. And we even had the UU Church of the Philippines involved. And it was amazing to have all these different, you know, really representing Asian Pacific Islander Unitarian Universalism. And we were dancing at the end of the night, we were dancing to Nikling, which is a Filipino bamboo stick dance. And to be able to dance to Nikling in a Unitarian church with my family and my colleagues and my friends, and it was just this magical night. And on top of all that, you know, so my family is from Cebu in central Philippines. And in Cebu, we're known for the best roasted pork lechon in the Philippines.
Oh, it's, I love lechon.
Crispy skin. Mm-hmm. It's roasted for over 8 hours. And my family found a Cebu-style lechon place from Susan. And we had lechon at the First Unitarian Church of Oakland to celebrate, which was just amazing.
Yeah, that's perfect. And do you live in Oakland?
Yes. So my partner and I have lived in Oakland since the fall of 2010. So 14 years this October. And we were part of the First Unitarian Church of San Diego before that for 7 years. And then, yeah, it's been a long time living in Oakland now.
Right on. And what are your pronouns?
My pronouns are he, him, and sha. Sha is the Filipino gender-neutral word. It's kind of funny because in Filipino culture, you know, my parents are always mixing up gender. So they'll call me, you know, her, or my sister him. And it's just kind of because in Filipino culture, in Filipino language, our language doesn't have gender, you know. And so it's for us, for Filipino Americans, I think it is an important part of reclaiming that our pronouns of sha have always been gender-neutral. And so he, him, sha.
Excellent. I have to say, this is a very short segue. We're not going to go down this rabbit hole, but I'm very envious because in Mexico, in Spanish, everything is gendered. It's like the chair is female, but the table is also female. But wait, maybe this thing is male. It's like, really? Does it have to be that way? Anyway,
yeah.
I have feelings about that. So you responded to my call to have folks come on the podcast and share about interesting experiences. And you wanted to tell us about your pilgrimage experience in Transylvania, yeah?
Yes.
What happened? Tell us, where did you go? When was it?
Yeah, so this was the first 3 weeks in September. So just last month, it feels like it was, the time, it just was felt different out there. So what started this was the fourth annual International Convention on Unitarian Universalist Women. And this women's convention, I think, started, I want to say, in like the late to mid 2000s. And Houston had the first one. It was in Europe before. And so this was the fourth time that the International Convention on Unitarian Universalist Women had been meeting. And they met in Koloshvar, Transylvania. Koloshvar is the Hungarian. In Romanian, it's known as Cluj-Napoca, and that's really the heart of where the Unitarian Church of Transylvania is. We have 60,000 Unitarians in Transylvania. It's the largest, you know, sort of concentration in Europe, and it was just an amazing experience. So the first 4 days was that international conference, and I was thankfully, I wouldn't have not been able to go if it was not for Starking School for the Ministry and the Balish Scholar Program in particular, sent myself and a second year student, Amy. The two of us were the delegation of Starking to this international convention. And it's important because in International Unitarian Universalism, you know, we used to have an organization called the International Council on Unitarian Universalism that was ICUU. And we used to have an organization called the Partnership Church Council, the PCC. Both of those organizations held different portfolios. And during the pandemic, they both decided to, you know, kind of collapse in their current iteration and create a new organization called the Leadership Design Team. And so if folks look it up, the Leadership Design Team is really this body of 12 people representing different Unitarian Universalist engagement throughout the world. All together worldwide, we have 800,000 Unitarian Universalists, you know, 60,000 in Transylvania, 10,000 in the Kashi Hills of Northeast India, 3,000 in the Philippines, originally Universalists, and then became Unitarian Universalists after 3,000 churches or 3,000 people in 24 churches in the Philippines. I met people that were organizers of their fellowships in Tokyo, in Japan, in Brazil. I met folks from the Unitarian Church of Kenya and South Africa. And just to, I've always known that we've been a global faith. And, you know, I always sort of heard a little bit about Francis David and the "we need not think alike to love alike" story, but to literally like touch the rock, you know, on where he preached, to be at the foot of the only Unitarian king that there ever was, John Sigismund, who, you know, had this 10-day public debate in 1568. And this 10-day public debate, you know, Transylvania was already a crossroads. It was a multi-ethnic crossroads of Hungarians, Romanians, Roma people, German Lutherans. And so there were Calvinists, there were Lutherans, there were Orthodox, there were, you know, different religions. And so the king had this kind of 10-day public debate and was like, let's talk about it. Let's bring your best people, Calvinists, bring your best people, you know, Catholics, bring your best people, you know, Lutherans. And for us, the Unitarians were represented by a bishop, a man named Francis David. He was the bishop of the Unitarian Church. He, you know, kind of really represented Unitarianism and the ideas. And the other thing that I finally connected is that originally Unitarians were known as anti-Trinitarians. So it was a rejection of the Trinity. And, you know, so before they were called Unitarians, they were more anti-Trinitarians. And that was a very heretical, radical thing to be, of course, outside of the Catholic Church. And so, you know, Francis David is one of the earliest anti-Unitarians. And after this 10-day public debate, the king was convinced that what Francis David was saying, where we can all respect each other, we can all, you know, if a village wanted to be Calvinist, go village. If you wanted to be Lutheran, be Lutheran. If you wanted to be Unitarian, go be Unitarian. Why do we have to have wars? And you know, what is, that makes no sense. And so right. for the first time, yeah, in, you know, one of the first times in Christian Europe, of course, there were other times, you know, especially in Spain where multi-religious life was flourishing. This was one of the earliest times in 1568 where a multi-religious, you know, in 1568, with the Edict of Torda passing, you know, saying that basically, you know, I mean, and what I also learned, it wasn't like people had a vote, you know, it wasn't like a village, you know, was one vote. It was kind of if the landlord of the village, you know, then could decide if they wanted to be Unitarian or Calvinist, you know, or, and then the whole village would become that church. And so it's fascinating to see these 450-year-old Unitarian villages that have been Unitarian for 450 years. And you see these old black and white pictures, you know, and we stayed in a lot of these guest houses and just to kind of, it felt really magical, you know, to kind of be at the place where Unitarianism started to really meet people that carry on this flame of this tradition. I mean, 1568 was only 50 years after Martin Luther's 95 Theses. This is the heart of the Protestant Reformation. Our faith comes out of this fire. And I feel like we don't know enough about that fire. And we're so anti-Christian in so many respects that it's like we distance ourselves from this history and this past. And I had never learned so much about like where our faith comes from the people that are still carrying on this tradition. It was just at every turn, it felt really special.
Wow. It sounds like it. And I feel like you really embodied the history lessons that we get in seminary about how this all came about, but you actually experienced it in your body in a different way.
Yeah.
And I know that some of our colleagues have the wonderful pilgrimage experiences to Transylvania, and some of our churches have sister churches, and like there's definitely a relationship. But this pilgrimage in particular was for this gathering. Tell me more about the gathering.
Yeah. So there was about, I think I want to say 250, 300 delegates from all over the world supporting Unitarian Universalist Women. And because, you know, the International Council on Unitarian Universalism as a whole doesn't exist, because the Partnership Church Council also doesn't exist, the International Council on UU Women is one of the only international bodies holding these relationships, So the conference is so important, because the only time now that international people are getting together, especially post-COVID, post-pandemic, is at this conference. And so it was very important because of that. It was held at the Unitarian High School in Koloshvar, which is a very special place. It's a 300-year-old Unitarian high school. It's four stories tall. The top floor is all dormitories, because students from around the country come to this Unitarian high school because it's one of the best high schools in the nation and in Europe. It's because Unitarians have always had, you know, when after communism kind of fell and people came back, one of the ministers told me that, you know, they really focused on rebuilding the schools. The schools were their priority more than even rebuilding the churches, because they needed people to be educated. And it was the idea that, you know, Unitarians, that we're on the side of, you know, like, we're on the side of like truth, and we're on the side of light, and that education is what's going to free all of us. And the more we know, it's the better. And so they invested in their school system, and they have, it's just a beautiful space. So all of the events were held at the Unitarian High School. There's history, hundreds of years of Unitarian history on every wall. I met some of the young adult leaders, current seminary students. They have, I think, about 40 to 60 students in their seminary, and it's a 6-year seminary. So it's a 6-year seminary program. It's, you know, a very, you know, they learn Latin and Greek and all the things classical. I mean, you know, it's a very rooted in the European classics. It was just fascinating to kind of meet, you know, sort of see their youth program and how their young adult stuff works. One of the things that I didn't really understand until I got there was that, so the Unitarian Church of Transylvania, all of our family, all of our kinship folks are Hungarian. So they're a Hungarian minority in a Romanian country. So, you know, in places, mostly they're about 7% of the country is Hungarian, while, you know, everybody else is pretty much Romanian. So if you're Romanian, that means you're part of the Romanian Orthodox Church. It's, you know, definitely more conservative. Transylvania is this region that is bordered by the Carpathian Mountains. It used to be part of the Kingdom of Hungary, and that, you know, and but after World War I, Hungary was on, you know, the wrong side and lost. And so part of the spoils of war was that Transylvania was ceded to Romania and became part of the country of Romania. So then imagine all of these people now become an ethnic minority in their own land. They weren't allowed to speak Hungarian. They weren't allowed to wave the Hungarian flag. So there was a story from one of the ministers in our church that said for many years, the church had to hide their Hungarian flag in the deepest part of the church organ. And that was the safest place for their flag that was so precious to them. And if the authorities found it, they would be surely punished. And so the flag now proudly hangs frontly. It's huge. And they must have stuffed it in there. And so it's just to hear stories like that. One of the other ministers, Reverend Baylor, he was part of our tour. So it was a 4-day conference and then a 10-day pilgrimage tour through Transylvania. And one of the ministers, he was probably in his mid-40s, and he was saying, you know, before the fall of the Berlin Wall, when he was about 11 years old, he remembers you would have 1 hour of state-run television in the week. Now, that was TV, 1 hour of state-run television. And for him, as an 11-year-old boy, they had 10 minutes of American cartoons on Sunday morning. And every kid's talking about it. It's the highlight. And he said it was like Woody Woodpecker or Popeye or, you know, just some in 10 minutes. And that was not my experience as an 11-year-old Filipino American growing up in Southern California. And it changed part of my world to hear stories like that and to sort of not experience, but to think about what life might have been like in Eastern Europe and at that time. And I've traveled through Western Europe before, and Eastern Europe feels completely different. It feels like not a whole different part of the world, and it is. There's a whole different history, a whole different culture, and the Unitarian Church of Transylvania really has experienced that trauma and that, you know. And so after the fall of the Berlin Wall, you know, 89, 90s, that's when all of these relationships and partnerships started flourishing. So I was reading something from John Buren's that said, you know, in the early 90s, there was almost 125 partnerships that were launched between North American congregations and the Transylvanian churches. And that, you know, really kind of, I think Oakland's partnership goes back that long. A lot of the older partnerships go back, you know, about 15, 20 years now. And so the biggest, I think, thing when I'm trying to ground it now and this experience meeting these people is post-pandemic, so many of our churches got real good on technology. We got real good on Zoom, on using social media, on getting on Facebook. And so we're ready. I think we're ready for that other push, you know, like what does it mean to kind of come out of this pandemic? What does it mean to, you know, really use technologies like Zoom and Facebook and Instagram and WhatsApp? And let's build some international covenant groups. Let's get an LGBTQ international conference on Unitarian Universalists. Let's get a young adult international conference on Unitarian Universalists. Like, we have 800,000 people around the world. And I'm 1,000% passionate that the more we get to know each other, the more that we let go of American ego and think we know always the right way and our way is the only right way and our version of Unitarian Universalism is the only version and the way we say God or don't say God is the only way to do it. I mean, we're doing Unitarian Universalism really well in lots of different places in this world. And I hope and I pray that we can somehow use that in our efforts to become an anti-racist, multicultural faith. You know, I preach a lot about the U Church of the Philippines, and I'm not saying there's 3,000 Filipinos in the Philippines that love Unitarian Universalism. What are they doing that might help First Unitarian Church of Oakland in reaching out to the Filipino American community? What are they doing that could help, you know, First Church in San Francisco to reach out to the Filipino community right next door to them? And so, you know, for me, it's this passion of, you know, understanding that we have to like knock down our own hubris and our own ego and, you know, get out of the way. And really, folks are ready in the Philippines, in India, in Kenya. They were so excited to meet other Unitarian Universalists that share similar liberal religious values. And like, there's not a reason why every UU can be a part of some covenant, international covenant group you know, based on identity or music or religious education or, you know, an age group. Like, so there, I have a billion ideas, but that's kind of the crux of it.
I love it. I love all of these ideas. Let's talk more about values in particular and the Article 2 values. Did they come up when you were there? Were people talking about the values? And how do you see the Article 2 values playing out on the international stage?
Yeah, this is definitely, you know, the tough part of the question. Money is a big challenge when it comes to international relationships, you know, because of colonization and global history and, you know, racism. The United States has a lot more money than a lot of these other places in Eastern Europe, in the Philippines, in India, in Kenya. And, you know, originally the easy way to do international relationships is to have rich white folks give, you know, rich white Americans give money to poorer folks. And that's the relationship. We did this, you know, we did that, we sent it off, you know, here's your $1,000 and that's it. You know, and that, I mean, it's messed up on all different levels, and it replicates that colonial model, right? That, you know, here you go, like, you know, here's $1,000, we have some rules on it, you know, and that's the relationship. And on the other side though, too, I mean, like a lot of that, like in the Philippines, there's one of those partner churches have sent hundreds of kids, dozens and hundreds of kids to college based on, you know, this 20-year international relationship. And so, like, yes, money was involved, and these also are transformative relationships, you know, that, and so how do we really handle that conversation around money well? And how do we create relationships that are not primarily focused on money, but are primarily focused on the relationships? You know, and so before it was like, all right, you know, here's the grant, you know, we'll talk to you in 2 years. The communication happens so much quicker now. And so now let's be in relationship with each other. Let's learn about what on the ground, what are the needs? Like, let's, you know, let's organize together. Oh, you guys, it would be really helpful if we had a well on this side of the church, you know, like let's run a campaign together to get that well, you know, like have it be more organic and on the ground and connected. And so I've been having I did a pilgrimage to the Philippines in January. And out of that pilgrimage, I created a new organization called PUSO, which is Pilipinx Unitarian Universalist Solidarity Organizing. And it's a group for Filipino-American Unitarian Universalists to be in relationship with the UU Church of the Philippines. And so it took us a while, but PUSO is now meeting every second Friday of the month at 6 p.m. Pacific time, is the Philippines next day, Saturday at 9 a.m. So it took us a while to figure out that sweet spot. But I mean, the meetings have been people anywhere from 7 to 14 people have been coming, half from the Philippines, half from the U.S., all, you know, Filipino American or related to the Filipino American community. And that's an example of something, you know, it was low hanging fruit. You know, let's figure out like a once a month meeting, you know, and people from the Philippines are loving it. People from the U.S. are loving it. We're creating a caucus for Filipino Americans in the context of our relationship to the diaspora, in our context with the relationship to the UU Church of the Philippines. And so that's an example of a community and an international group that takes into account Article 2 and our values of, you know, like, what does it mean to covenant together around justice, around interconnectedness, around equity, and to really mean it and to really be a two-way street. It's not just, I'm the American, you know, here's all the answers. That can't be our relationship. It's this, let me learn from you, let's listen, let's meet each other in that field on that equal plane. And there's lots of things that I don't know, and there's lots of things, you know, that we can learn and just chat. And so I've been encouraging myself to have these monthly international relations, and, you know, and I even picked up a few kind of contacts in Transylvania that I'm trying to keep in touch with. But yeah, in the age of not having anything else, you know, any other international resources, I think it's important that we kind of pick up the mantle ourselves and be a little creative.
Wow. Sounds like you are keeping yourself quite busy.
Yes, definitely.
That's great. That's great. What advice would you offer colleagues who want to begin to explore international relationships, but don't have their own heritage or their own experience or connection? What would you suggest to our white colleagues if they wanted to begin international relationships with other Unitarians and Universalists around the world? How would they go about doing that?
Well, I have a link that I created, and I hope maybe you could share it when you send this out, but it's a bit.ly link, bit.ly/globaluu, and I can send that to you. And it has everyone's contacts from the Transylvanian Church to the Philippines to India, if you want to find out about any of our main international partners and how to build a partnership with them. All the information is there, bit.ly/globaluu. And the other big thing that I learned, and I think this is where I'm trying to push us in the Bay Area, is that both in the Boston region and in the DC region, the 7 to 9 partner churches that have existing partners in India, in the Philippines, and Transylvania, the 7 to 9 of those churches meet together quarterly. Every quarter, those churches are, hey, where are you going next summer? Hey, can our choir join your choir? Hey, you want to partner with a new church? Can two churches sponsor a church in India? Because we can't really host it with one church, but having 2 or 3 churches now makes this international relationship a little easier. And so I'm preaching on December 1st, about Global Unitarian Universalism in Oakland. And we're inviting all of our Bay Area, Northern California regional partners to come. So far, San Mateo's coming. They've had a partnership with the Philippines since 2001. Walnut Creek, Berkeley, and San Francisco has had longtime standing partnerships with Transylvania. They're coming to our meeting. And in the afternoon, we're gonna have the first sort of kickoff of a Bay Area, Northern California. It's a matter of just resourcing. It is hard, very hard for smaller congregations to build international relations one-on-one on their own. Some of the big churches that have lots of resources and can send their choir every year, can do it. But I think a really good strategy is to build these regional models and have the big churches and medium churches and small churches all support each other and just coordinate your efforts, like do a joint worship regionally, with the Philippines or with Transylvania. And so,
hearing you say hook into relationships that already exist rather than trying to start a new relationship cold, connect with someone that already knows someone and then you can start connecting.
Yeah. And then we're just working as a region. So for example, San Francisco, after I preach in San Francisco, their choir had been to Transylvania 15 times, and they had never been to the Philippines churches. And so in 2 years, their choir is talking about a trip to the Philippines. And now because we sort of have this regional connection, other churches in the Bay Area are going to join their trip, which helps their numbers and makes the trip, more feasible for everyone. And then the idea that if we're locally connected to each other, then we can sort of maximize our impact, on a Philippines church or, in one area too. So we can kind of coordinate efforts to, really kind of enhance the stability of the partnership. It's been hard to keep a lot of these partnerships, folks are getting older. It's 2 or 3 really overtired, burnt out people that are trying to run these international partnerships. And so it has been a struggle to kind of maintain these and to figure out, how to go beyond the one-on-one model and how to really use technology to build relationships, we just didn't have access to this before. And so now that we do, and even, folks in Romania, folks in the Philippines, they have Facebook, like they're on, their smartphones too. Like if they can make a call, we there's ways if we just get organized that we can really build international community together.
Yeah. I love that. Mm-hmm. Have you had an opportunity to work with the UU Service Committee?
I have not yet. I don't know too much about their model, but yeah, that's, I know they do a lot of international work, but I have not had an opportunity to connect with them yet.
I would love to connect you to some colleagues there, because it sounds like this is a real passion for you. And I know that UUSC is being very thoughtful and attentive about followership, about being in right relationship, about honoring partners and centering partners' needs. They're doing some really good work there too. So I think that you two need to be connected. And I appreciate how you're in this mode of like, let's just make it happen is what it sounds like. Here's a website, here's a space. Like when I asked you that question, I didn't know that you were going to tell me there's a Midly website. I'm like, okay, Kevin, you go. That's great.
Thank you. Yeah.
What other advice or what else do you want to process out loud about your experience for the benefit of all of our colleagues who are listening? What do you want to say?
I can't even like the relationships that I met are, I treasure them so much. Like people, you know, I mean, it was interesting. Like they were asking questions that when my cousins first moved here from the Philippines, they were asking similar questions where it was like, oh, you're from California. So, you know, does that mean you surf? What's Disneyland like? You know, do you see movie stars all the time? You know, like these kind of I've never felt more Californian in my life, you know, like where it was like, just like, oh yeah. I mean, I've been born and raised in California my whole life. You know, this is my world, but you don't recognize your American privilege or Californian privilege kind of when you, and so it's for people in Eastern Romania, you know, like just the concepts of America and California are so like, it was just interesting just kind of build these relationships and hear these stories, and we come from such different parts of the world. And yet like, you know, it's like, and yet, you know, their song, their Sekli Blessing is a Hungarian song. It's in one of our hymns. I think it's number 1048. And I've been singing that as part of a lot of my sermons. And there's so much beauty in the Hungarian language, in how Hungarian culture survived through so much oppression, how the Unitarian faith kept these communities together and was really, they had to rely on it because it was the only thing, you know, that they could rely on. And there's something we can learn about their faith and about their God and about what they've gone through and about the suffering and the resilience of their people. And like, I hope every Unitarian Universalist can go, you know, and do at least a pilgrimage once in their lifetime and, you know, and just be connected to so many. It enriches my own faith, knowing and hearing and meeting how the world religion has sparks around this globe. And I've never felt more on fire for Unitarian Universalism after hearing about why, like, so many people from around the world, you know, are just as on fire as I am.
Very inspiring. Thank you for sharing that passion and that fire with us. I had never considered that a pilgrimage would be an important part of my faith, but you got me thinking. I think it helps our own identity development, right? To put ourselves in other circumstances where we are forced to notice where we came from and what shaped us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I love it. Well, thank you. Thank you, Rev Kev, for your time with us. I really appreciate all of your enthusiasm and your stories and saying yes to sharing our stories with each other on this podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This was such a joy and a pleasure. And yeah, thank you for reaching out. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening, colleagues. I look forward to interviewing others of you. Reach out to me, please. I would love to have you on the podcast.